I'm going to call the meeting of the Greater Minnesota Economic Workforce Development Policy Committee to order. Our first testifier is not here, so if Representative Norton is ready, we'll ask her to come forward and bring her bill.
You bet.
Representative Norton, would you like to move your bill?
I would. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 682 for passage and I believe a re-referral to the Jobs Committee.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for hearing this important bill.
I don't want to cut you off, but I think you're supposed to say, just state your name first. And I don't know if I had you do that yet. I said
well,
it, but I don't think you did.
I will be happy to do that, Mr. Chair. Kim Norton, hearing House File 682. So, members, I'm just going to quickly, because there are some people that are slightly new to the legislature and certainly new to this committee and the concept of Destination Medical Center. But this House file deals with some changes to the Destination Medical Center legislation, which was an economic development opportunity that was passed in 2013 and is taking place, and it's been under works for the last several years. And it was a way to capitalize on some Mayo Clinic private investments in our community, match that with other private investors. And the goal of it was to produce 25 to 30,000 new direct jobs and some 1,800 to 2,200 construction jobs over the next 20 years. And so it was passed in 2013. We've been implementing it. We have the Destination Medical Center Corporation, which meets very regularly in a very public setting. We're very excited about some of the private investors that have come forward. But as we've worked through the Destination Medical Center process, a couple things came to light that were perhaps slightly different than we intended when we passed the legislation. And today I'm bringing forward a request to do two things. The first is that we're going to change slightly, or it's basically clarifying what the city can get credit for in the planning and use of city funds in planning for the Destination Medical Center development, and that's through the DMCC, which is the corporation, and the EDA, the Economic Development Association. And there's been some confusion as to whether the city in providing some funding, the law does say you have to contract with the EDA, whether that funding will count as the city's required $128 million part of the investment. Okay. And so for those
Representative Norton, yep. I hate to interrupt you, but we do have a quorum.
Yep.
And so Representative Hancock, would you be willing to move the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have read them, and I would move the minutes of February 12th.
Okay. Is there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Norton, go ahead.
So Mr. Chair and members, the city had a $128 million requirement in order to complement the request that was originally asked of the state to fund the Destination Medical Center. And we want, as I was saying earlier, we want to make certain that any money they spend on the EDA and the DMCC for planning and implementing the Destination Medical Center concept is part of that $128 million and not in addition to it. And I can just tell you, as the meetings have occurred in the community, there were concerns raised by citizens that it might be in addition to that $128 million and that additional tax dollars, could either be put on the taxpayers or... let's just leave it at that. The people are afraid that property taxes could be raised to pay for additional funding of the EDA, and we don't want that to happen, and it was not the intent of the original legislation that happened. So this language is clarifying that for the taxpayers and I think for the legislature too, who supported this bill back in 2013. So I'm going to let our mayor and our city council president provide further testimony as to the impact that Destination Medical Center and funding the EDA could have on the community if we don't pass this legislation, and hope that I have your support to pass it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Norton, thanks very much and good afternoon. I think Representative kind of...
If you could state your name and position for the record, please.
Ardell Brady, Mayor, City of Rochester, Minnesota. We are, together with Mayo Clinic, working on to bring the brightest and the best people to Rochester, and certainly Mayo Clinic is a world-class medical center, has been and will continue to be as we move forward with this. There are Mayo Clinic employees in over 60 of our counties in Minnesota, so it's a project that is certainly in Rochester but will affect positively the entire state of Minnesota with the revenues that will be coming in. I am a member of the Destination Medical Center Corporate Board, one of the eight that are on there, and as I told our council president on the way up, I probably wouldn't speak at all this today. I'll be Alfred Hitchcock and just make an appearance, and he will have the speaking part today. So we appreciate the opportunity to address this today, and with that, I will introduce Randy Staver, our city council president.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Switch seats with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randy Staver. I'm president of the Rochester City Council. Thank you for letting me share a few comments today. The planning for Destination Medical Center continues to make good progress, and we're on track with our projected timetable. The draft plan has been completed and now has been given to the City of Rochester to begin the 60-day review process. Although not required, the city has scheduled two public hearings to allow further input from our community regarding thoughts on the plan as proposed. We fully appreciate the importance of what DMC is intended to accomplish. As with any initiative of this magnitude, there are costs involved with the planning itself as we come up to speed. We believe there was an omission in the DMC legislative language, and we are here today asking for your support in making a change. Two simple changes are being requested. First, we ask that the DMC board and some EDA costs also be included among the costs for public infrastructure development, and that the City of Rochester receive full credit against our $128 million obligation. Second, as part of the original DMC language, you provided us with several options that we may invoke to help meet our financial obligation. We would ask that we also be able to use those funding sources to help offset these planning costs as well. I would note that the requested changes do not affect the state funding at all. They are only meant to include all of the expenses associated with the development and execution of the plan, and allow us at the local level the latitude to cover those expenses with the funding sources that you have provided. Absent the requested change, the city will need to look for other funding sources, up to and including raising property taxes, and that is something we do not want to do. The goals of DMC are incredible. An estimated 35,000 new jobs over the next 20 years and several billion dollars projected in new revenue for the state of Minnesota. The positive impact for Rochester, Southeast Minnesota, and the state of Minnesota cannot be underestimated. We have a great deal of momentum surrounding DMC. We are seeing project proposals coming forward already, several of which have been approved, and we are seeing excitement in our community that is unprecedented. We ask for your support in supporting these changes that we've requested. Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, council member. Just for one clarification, the original intent was for the funds to be used towards this, or are these unexpected funds or unexpected expenses?
Mr. Chair, that's actually an interesting question and a little bit of a bone of contention as we've moved ahead with this. As someone who was involved in the drafting of that language, it was the EDA, the Economic Development Association, that was developed for Destination Medical Center, was asked to be a private entity. And that's how it's stated in the language of the legislation. It also says in that legislation that the city must contract with them. So my expectation was that outside funds would be used to on the Economic Development Association, but that the city would have an obligation to move forward with the plan by having some sort of contract. As it actually has rolled out, there was a request of the city, I think, or some at least some discussion, that the city would fund the entire Economic Development Association. And at one point, there was some talk of some 11 employees. Our own Rochester Economic Development Association, which already exists, only has, I think, five, if I have that correct, something like that. So this was starting to get very large and was of concern to me because I frankly thought it would be funded by either the Mayo Clinic in partnership with some private investors and others. So it's been an issue from the beginning, and we're just clarifying what I believe the legislative intent was, which is this is it's a private entity, and we'll contract, and the city will contract with them, but that any money, small or large, because I think that's out of our control at this point, that's used will count toward the 128. That for some of you who are new, when this Destination Medical Center request came to the legislature, there was no match for the city. It was the legislature that moved ahead and said the city is going to be responsible for basically taxing itself and its members for their $128 million portion. So it's pretty important to those of us who worked on this to make certain that no more than the 128, which was already a really big change from zero, that no more than the 128 is asked of them.
One more question.
It was,
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and I thanks for that explanation, Representative Burton. As this project moves forward towards the end and the bills get paid and the dust settles, is there an anticipation that this will be an additional when all the bills are paid, is this going to be an additional cost, or is this, do you think that this will fit within the confines of the state's ownership on this project?
Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Miller, I think if I'm understanding your question, if we pass this legislation, I believe that the DMC initiative will move ahead and that it will be confined to the $128 million and that there will be no additional burden on the taxpayers of my city. That is my hope, and I think that's what we've drafted for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. So, Representative Norton, mm-hmm. Do you know if there'll be additional requests coming? You know, we had one that was a correction already that went through, and that was very important, and we appreciate that. And now we have this one. Are there going to be additional requests or changes to the initial legislation coming through that you're aware of, or is this sort of the end now?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
Representative O'Neill, my hope is that between now and the end of session, we will pass this bill. I actually am working on an amendment with some additional clarifications, and I don't know if we'll move those forward or not at this point. I do believe there's another bill that has been drafted by Representative Drazkowski that mirrors this language and also has some stipulations regarding zip rail, which is not part of this particular initiative, so that's out there as well. So my hope is that this bill, when it passes this body, will be the last change, at least for this year, in a project this big. I think it'd be really hard for me to say, or any of us to say, that you'll never see anything about Destination Medical Center come forward again, because this was a huge project and it was done in 1 year, and while it's very exciting, it's also very complicated. So my hope is this is done, and to be honest, my hope had also been that this change would have been in that initial bill, but we just didn't get it in there, partly because there was an agreement, I think, with the Senate on narrowing the language.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you for saying that about the Senate. Can you just help us understand, since we're not the Senate, we're the House, sort of the negotiation and sort of how this got left out, and just help us understand how that process of what happened there.
Sure. It's my understanding in talking with Senator Scoy that they were trying to keep because it was going to be on the federal tax conformity bill, that they were trying to keep the scope to the items that were identified by the Attorney General rather than an issue that we had identified. So they only focused on the items that were linked to the Attorney General's report, which was, I think, in August or July or August. The information that came out from there. So that's what they had agreed on, and in my mind, this also is a technical change, but because it wasn't part of the Attorney General's comments, they asked it to be carried separately. And I do think they will. The Senate is agreeable to this language as well.
Thank you. And just one, thank you for bringing this forward, and I do appreciate that. And I don't expect you to have a, a magic ball. You can look into the future, but just so we know if you have other things that you're working on that we could consider, if this is sort of the package for this year and we're good to go. And so I appreciate you letting us know. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I want to thank you for doing this stuff. I know how essential that medical center is down there. My family uses it ourselves, and we've used it more than once, even though we live north of the metro. I do have some concerns on this bill. One thing I want to know is if, with this bill, is this going to reduce the local match obligation if we pass this bill the way it stands?
Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, no, this will mean that the full 128 obligation still stands. It just means that any costs that the city encounters, or the county, frankly, encounters with regard to the Economic Development Association costs will be part of the 128.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, the reason I ask that in line 3.27, it's the way I read this before the changes, it states that only one half of the city's obligation some of the funding requirements for administration and costs is counted towards that 128 match, but that one half is removed, so now all of it counts. So it looks to me like it's reducing the city's responsibility. I'm just concerned about that.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, and I think what this refers to is as it relates to the 128. So I think prior to this, there had been some discussion that half of the planning would count as the 128. I don't think anyone understood the magnitude of the EDA and what that might grow to. So it isn't half of the 128. I think initially it was half of the operating administrative costs, and now we're saying all of the planning and administrative costs will be part of the 128. And what does get cut, and I think we should be clear about this, the 128 obligation, any money that's spent on the planning and operation of the DMCC and the EDA means that there's that much less money to be spent on the infrastructure. And my hope is that this sends a pretty strong message to folks back home that are working on the EDA and the DMCC, that the more money they choose to spend, the less money there is for infrastructure, which is what they came to us for in the first place. So I'm hoping this will actually curb the kind of big eyes for the administrative portion.
Mr. Chair,
okay, continue.
If I could comment, one piece of latitude that the City Council has is each year, annually, we have an opportunity to approve this administrative budget. So we'd have that local authority and oversight, and what we're asking for here is an ability to have the latitude to pay for those expenses. But we do have budget authority or budget approval on an annual basis. The other comment I wanted to make is that this has just been an exciting time, and we've not been standing still. In the last, since this legislation was approved, we've already approved a project in excess of $140 million, and we have other projects in the pipeline. We will probably come very close to approving about $180-some million of projects. So we are moving forward in the community, so that's why this has some urgency to it, that we're able to meet some of the other obligations that are in front of us.
Any other questions? Any more testimony? Representative Norton.
We have other people here if there were questions, but I think they're, I don't see anyone racing up here, so I think they're satisfied with our testimony.
Is there any questions pro or for or against this bill? Well, they had their opportunity.
They didn't.
I assume it was your motion?
It was. Would you like me to renew my motion?
I would like you to renew your motion.
I'd like passage of House File 682 and it to be sent on to the Jobs and Energy Committee.
It's close enough.
Okay,
all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. On to Crop Rules Committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Quam, I believe you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to our committee. I will move House File 209 for passage, and it will be referred to Jobs Committee, Groffalo's Jobs and Energy Committee. Would you please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, over the years, there's been an attempt to disengage with the multi-county organization. The composition and function of the organization drifted away from what originally Dodge County wished to participate in. That has not worked, and the only avenue now is this bill. And I do have two people with that can testify to some of the history and details and be available for questions.
I think that would be very appropriate. Would you give your name for the record and continue with your testimony?
Mr. Chair, my name is Jim Elmquist. I am the county administrator for Dodge County. Commissioner Rod Peterson for Dodge County was planning to attend, but he got caught up in something, so he might be walking in as we speak. If you want to introduce.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Van Ram. I'm from the Dodge Center Housing and Redevelopment Authority.
Very well, welcome to our committee.
Dodge County appreciates the opportunity to have this time to demonstrate our support for House File 209, allowing for Dodge County's exclusion from the Southeast Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. The issue being presented today dates back to the mid-90s, when Dodge County asked to be removed from the authority on two occasions, in 1994 and 2000, citing it no longer wanted to be a participant in the agency. The practice of requesting Dodge's removal proved to be a futile, as in both cases the Sempra board adopted motions not to dissolve its area of operation in Dodge County and would not allow for our withdrawal. While this long-standing dispute preceded my time with Dodge County, it stemmed from the belief that cost deficiencies within Sempra were non-existent, a municipal project that was asked for in funding assistance that didn't present a proper case for moving forward, the executive director's persistent advancements of projects requiring subsidies even after county objections, and perceived uncoordinated project management. To this day, you will see after this statement that many of the issues are still of concern to Dodge County. From the onset, Dodge County elected officials determined that it wanted to be removed to find other HRA alternatives for the county to consider in Southeast Minnesota. It should be noted that Dodge County has not contributed financially as a member to SEMCRA, considered itself a member of SEMCRA since 1995, and will not willfully represent itself on the SEMCRA board. However, the executive director for that authority has allowed for one representative from West Concord, Minnesota, to represent, in his words, the county's interests. Even without contributions from our county, SEMCRA has elected to continue to provide services to the county, and it was only until 2012 that SEMCRA stated that if we do not contribute after a financial shortfall on their end, it would freeze HUD vouchers within the county, which it did for the remainder of 2012. At this point, there are three other former members to SEMCRA: Winona, Goodhue, and Wabasha counties. There are also contractual members for specific HR services, which are primarily HUD voucher-related services. In 2012, two of those counties, along with Dodge County, explored the possibility of moving to another agency in southeast Minnesota for management of Section 8 vouchers, and were told by the executive director that those vouchers within our county were not the county's, but instead SEMCRA's and SEMCRA's own for their determination. There was no choice in the matter of asking for alternatives, as HUD representatives agreed that the vouchers were SEMCRA's and not the individual counties moving forward. This has presented a large barrier for the county. Current law makes it onerous to be removed, as there is nothing in the legislation that offers the opportunity unless your partners within the organization consent. There is no other allowances for removal, such as a sunset clause for the organization or independent determination. There is no sunset clause within the legislation. Dodge County requested in 2012-2013 from SEMCRA that, with the understanding the exercise of Dodge County asking for formal withdrawal would be rebuked by SEMCRA. The county asked for mediation between the two parties to settle the longstanding dispute. Those efforts were met with little to no response by SEMCRA. In 2013, SEMCRA asked for special legislation requesting taxing authority within Dodge County, which would not be under the auspices of county officials. Dodge County actively opposed the legislation, as did the other counties in SEMCRA, which begged the question of how special legislation could be sought when the defining members of the authority opposed the request in the first place. In 2014, Dodge formally requested removal and held a public hearing to that effect. A resolution was passed and forwarded to SEMCRA. Although each independent county is to make a determination per statute, the SEMCRA Executive Board voted to deny the request. It is not believed any of the three counties has made a formal vote on this matter, and were advised by the Executive Director to table the request. It became clear that to remove itself formally from the agency, Dodge would have to enter into a legal dispute with SEMCRA or seek other alternatives. We chose the latter and asked for Representative Quam's assistance, as it is believed it would not be in the public interest for what is defined as two public agencies litigating against one another. At this point, Dodge County would request that its current bill be considered, as it offers a clear definitive opportunity for Dodge to be removed. It defines an avenue for Dodge County to clearly end its relationship with SEMCRA and outlines what terms Dodge must meet moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to testify there? Any questions from the members? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Quam, did you make the HRA, this multi-county HRA, aware that you were bringing this bill here to the committee today?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have carried this bill in past years and had some discussions, and they were not conducive to any effort. Basically, they were not didn't want to sit down and discuss how we could orderly resolve this. They were just saying that they were against it. And frankly, this is not the Met Council. This is not a huge group of counties working on vast number of projects. It was some counties coming together thinking that it would be better to work together in this process, found out it wasn't, and like the Chinese finger puzzle, they didn't find a way out.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Representative Quam, did you invite them to come and testify and tell their side? Because it's probably not the best way to do legislation is to just hear one side of the story. So I guess the question is, did you invite them? Did you make them aware that there's going to be a hearing today? Did they tell you, no, we don't want to be here, we're not coming up? What's their excuse for not being here?
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know what their excuse is. In past years, I have tried to hold conversations and try and work together for something. They have not been conducive to a conversation. I received a notification that this bill was coming up, and no, I did not send them an invitation. You know, frankly, they haven't returned previous calls for years, and so I had no expectation they would be open to any further conversations.
Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Klum, this is an issue that started in 1995, 20 years later, and I thought the Hatfields and McCoys had a problem.
I'm not so sure they weren't from there.
I'm not going there. I'm just not going to go there. Will this affect... Okay, I'll have a couple of questions here. You talked about Section 8 housing or HRA supplemental housing. Is this split going to affect low-income housing, or I guess the new term for it is market-rate housing nowadays, because that's what everybody's been calling low-income housing in greater Minnesota. So is this going to affect the ability for people in Dodge County to find people not making a lot of money to find housing? Sure, we'll go with the director of housing.
I'll address that if you don't mind. Actually, we feel really strongly about this. We feel that it would benefit the residents of Dodge County, because at this point, Simcoe is located in Wabasha. So for many of our residents, low-income folks, elderly people who don't have transportation or the means to apply or learn about the program, it creates a hardship. They don't have access to it because it's not local. It's Wabasha's a good 45 minutes from Dodge Center. So as far as those people being helped, I believe that it would not affect them if this agreement was terminated. I think it would benefit them, quite frankly.
And Mr. Chair, one last thing.
Representative,
if you've been trying to get this settled for 20 years, you know there is an office over that the state runs called the Dispute Resolution in the Bureau of Mediation Services. You might want to think about that one if you've had this kind of luck over the last 20 years.
Any other questions? Yes. Please give your name for the record. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, I'm Rod Peterson. I'm a commissioner with Dodge County. I apologize for being late. I don't know why this was originally set up, but it just seems counterintuitive to me, is that why would these counties be competing with each other? Well, we are competing with each other all the time for economic development and redevelopment and the likes. And even with this entity, we're competing against each other for housing and where people to stay. And this entity doesn't look at the best interest of any one county, but for its own livelihood. And when this was set up, I think it was... not set up with a sunset clause or any exit clause that was in it. And I know this group already pushes that issue about having sunset clauses or having legislation that will end at some point, and then it would have to be reestablished if it's good to stay with it. Here, we don't have a way to get out of it, and it's frustrating. And even if we do leave, if you grant us that permission, the Section 8 vouchers are already going to be with SHMTRA, and that's okay. We'll discuss and work with them about that right now. I think it'd be bad for them to say that, although Congress says, here, you can have these 20 vouchers for your county, but we're going to let this other entity decide where they're going to use them. And if they wanted, they could use them all in one town at this point. But that's a different battle. We just want to get out of this relationship, get divorced, and then we'll talk about child custody issues later. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify, it was in the statement, but in 2013, Dodge County formally requested mediation with SEMTRA. We were, I wouldn't say turned down is the appropriate word, but I feel comfortably saying we were ignored.
Who did you contact to do that? Board of Mediation?
We both at that point in time had our attorneys talking to each other, and our attorney had requested from their attorney that we enter into mediation rather than potential future litigation.
Okay. Thank you.
Very well. Any other questions? From seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 209 pass and be referred to Jobs and Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You're on your way to that committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have we have 5-7, Representative Franzen, I believe.
Some of my notes are at the Minshew hearing.
Welcome to our committee.
Thanks, Representative Gunther. I'd like to move House File 578.
Since you are in this committee, I don't think you can quite do that yet.
All right. I think Representative Johnson will
578. Mm-hmm. I will move 578 to pass and be sent to Representative Garofalo's committee.
Okay.
Please continue. 578.
Mm-hmm. 575. Members, good afternoon. House File 578 is a business development public infrastructure bill. It's not a pretty bill, but does provide funding for infrastructure needs such as sewer, water, and roads. Infrastructure so that jobs can move into the area. This bill increases the maximum grant amount from $1 million to $2 million. Currently, a lot of projects are being underfunded artificially. DEED has put an internal artificial cap on projects. And if you go through your list, I believe that you probably have it in your folder, there is a list of project dollar amounts. And you can see that the majority of the grants are less than $1 million, some of them $250,000 and less. Why is the artificial cap a big deal? Well, the property ends up not being as competitive because of higher infrastructure costs to the city. And I have a couple of testifiers here who will speak on behalf of the bill.
Give your name for the record, please.
Hi, I'm Heidi Omerza. I am the president of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which is an advocacy organization for over 85 cities in Greater Minnesota. I'm also an Ely council member and president of the Ely EDA. I am happy that the House has set up a committee to focus on Greater Minnesota economic development issues. The coalition believes targeted investments by the state in local public infrastructure, job training, workforce housing, broadband, and transportation will pay big dividends to the state in the future from economic growth in Greater Minnesota. I would like to thank the legislators here from both parties who have co-authored legislation to address these issues, and a special thank you to Representative Franzen for being the chief author of House File 578 and also 579, which make policy improvements and provide funding for Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program, the BDPI, which Representative Franzen has outlined. This program that has helped cities of all sizes in greater Minnesota and every region of greater Minnesota provide public infrastructure to enable private business growth, which has been outlined. I would like to introduce Dan Dorman, who is the executive director of Greater Minnesota Partnership, which the coalition works closely with. Dan.
Representative Dorman, welcome back to our committee for the 19th time.
Happy to be here, Mr. Chair. It's my favorite place in the whole world.
I can tell.
Today. The Greater Minnesota Partnership strongly supports the BDPI program, the Greater Minnesota Public Development Infrastructure Program. It is a proven job creator. It was created in, just a little bit of history, it was created back in 2003, and a little bit in response, members, if you think about sometimes there are really big projects in the metro area that are large enough that stand alone. They're really good projects. Last year, for example, there was a TCAP proposal put forward that was for the facility in Arden Hills. We think that's a great program, very similar to a BDPI-styled program. But if you think about the communities that this goes to, instead of thinking about it as a $20 million ask, just look at that chart and look at the cities that have gotten those dollars. And some of them are relatively small. When I, prior life, I was the EDA guy in Elbert Lee, and helped the city of Heartland get a grant for $25,000, and that was a huge thing for them. They created 13 jobs, big thing for that community. So I would encourage you not to think about that big dollar amount, but look at those individual projects, and it gives those communities an opportunity to expand and grow and create jobs, just like things happen here in the metropolitan area. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will cease. There's one other city testifier.
Give you a name for the record, sir.
Gerald Nelson, Community Development Director in Staples. When Dan sent out an email looking for people that wanted to come down and testify, I was excited to do it. We did a BDPI project in Staples this past summer, and I wanted to just take a couple of minutes and kind of tell you about that project, and I think it goes a long ways towards people understanding what the BDPI program will do. Stern Rubber Company is a manufacturing company in Staples. They moved up to our neck of the woods in 1973, and they've been a very good, consistent employer in our community. They really developed and specialized the technique of bonding rubber to metal, and do a lot of work for companies such as Polaris, Articat, and also American Valve, which is a valve commonly used for municipal water systems. Great company and a very diverse company from an employee standpoint. They've got the full range of types of jobs. So last May, Stern Rubber approached the city of Staples and kind of let us know that they were planning an expansion that would start towards the end of summer 2014. One of the concerns that they had at that time had to do with fire suppression. Because of their expansion, it was going to kind of throw them over that threshold where they were now going to be required to sprinkle their facility. Because of the type of product, being rubber, it's not just a little stream of water, but they need a big stream of water with booster pumps and the whole nine yards. So we were very concerned about our ability as a city to provide them with the adequate water flow that they were going to need for that expansion. And, of course, we wanted to make sure that they were able to expand in Staples. So in June of last summer, a company was brought in to do some flow testing, and as expected, we did not have adequate flow to meet the needs that they were going to have once they put sprinklers into the building. Basically, at that point, we made some initial contact with folks from Department of Employment and Economic Development, exploring what our options were, and BDPI basically came to the surface as probably the best option to help with some of the financing of that new infrastructure. Over the course of July, basically spent our time getting quotes from contractors to do the project, and ultimately submitted the BDPI grant application on August 13th. August 27th, we received the award letter. So that's basically a two-week turnaround time, which in, I guess, my experience with grants is pretty quick. So we were very very pleased with the effort from the folks at Deed in reviewing that and turning it around. Basically, the project started on the 10th of September. That's when the contractor was on site and started putting in that water main. And basically, they were done in 3 days, put in 350 feet of 10-inch water main, which was adequate flow for Stern Manufacturing and their sprinkler system. I'd like to invite all of you to their ribbon cutting and open house next Thursday on February 26th. Their project that we provided the infrastructure for was about a 12,500 square foot warehouse, office, and manufacturing space. And five new jobs this year, another five in the following year. And from the city standpoint, we're happy to see about $600,000 of additional tax base in our city. Now, if you look at the map, our project is highlighted as one of the BDPI projects from this past year. $23,230 is basically what the grant amount was. Not the largest on the list. In fact, if I look at it, it's probably the smallest, not the smallest of all times. You know, why is the grant a big deal for the city of Staples? Total project cost for that water main was about $52,000. And again, notified of it in May, 2014 budgets already set and established the following September and December. So a unexpected $52,000 expenditure would have a substantial impact. We don't have a huge tax base. That would be about a 6% levy increase if we were to levy that entire amount in Staples. So good program. Wanted to come down and support it, and I think it really helps with economic development needs in rural Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Mulry.
I don't do that to you.
Excuse me. I will pay for that one.
Yes, you will.
Representative Mahoney.
I just want to make sure I heard you right. You said the project was $23,000 or whatever, and $52,000 total. The grant was $23,000 and the project was $52,000. Did I hear you right when you said it was a $600,000 increase to your property tax base? That's to the base, not the actual collection, or what?
To the actual tax base, it'll add $600,000 to the market value of their property.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chair,
Mahoney.
What does that increase your what does that increase your tax collection? Would it $1,000 a year or $10,000 a year?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I can do the math in my head on that, but I would guess that it's to the several thousand dollar mark.
Okay. Representative Dill.
I got to think about that one, because if the city did not raise their levy, it wouldn't mean anything to the city in terms of additional revenue. It would lower the property taxes of all the rest of the people in the city. So they wouldn't get any extra payment, because they would be, if they didn't raise their levy, the property would be carrying a couple of shovels full of the original wheelbarrow full of dollars. So, and when I was a city administrator and we built a $3 million motel in town and our levy was only $59,000, and that $3 million hotel was going to represent 100% of our tax base, a doubling. We doubled the levy in 1 year, and we had 200 people in the audience to find out why we raised the levy 100%. And we said, so we can provide you with some additional stuff that you didn't have before, because we're pretty smart. And we didn't raise it 100%, but at least we got a lot of people to the meeting. But that's the point I'm making, is that, they wouldn't. The city of Staples would not receive any additional money because of the tax base. You actually did the best possible thing you could do, and that's lower the property taxes of everyone in the city by getting that.
Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee, yes. Ultimately, if the city's levy, dollar amount levy, remained the same, it would have the effect of bringing down property taxes for every other parcel in the community.
Mr. Chair, what I thought I heard you say then was is that if you did levy for the $52,000, it would have been a 6% property tax increase to pay for it in 1 year.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. Representative Norton, sorry.
It's all right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just trying to get my head around a couple things. This is a 50% match. And I heard, I'm looking at the numbers, and I heard Representative Franzen say it's underfunded. So I'm wondering if you can tell, I was trying to add up the amounts, and I may not have all the information here, but was all the money used in all the years we've had it, and in fact in 2014, was all the money used in the current fund?
Representative Norton, I'll let Dan Dorman answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Norton. Prior to last year's funding, the program was depleted. In fact, there was a commitment I know of in southern Minnesota that deed wanted the fund, but had the funds not went into there, it wouldn't have been replaced. So the biennial funding for this program since its inception has been $10 million over the biennium. Last year, the funding was $6.2 million. I think they have around half of that appropriation left.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, if I can, I'm looking at the total appropriations, and I see $10 million in 2005, and it looks like...
But biennial, $5 million a year.
Right, but even looking at that, you don't have 10 in every year. I see 10 in a couple years. But I'm just, you know, saying it's under... I'm very supportive of the program, so don't get me wrong here. I was just trying to make sense of the fact that it's underfunded. There's money left yet this year, and I wonder if some of the problem isn't, as I look at all these projects, the issue isn't tough for cities to come up with their match, if that isn't part of the problem. But I was having a hard time agreeing that it's underfunded if the money wasn't all used up. So that was sort of where I was going with that statement. And then my second one is line 2.16, and a couple others you have, is likely to create. And so I'm a little worried, are we putting any of our investment at risk if likely to is the bar that you have to reach? Because if you fund something and it doesn't happen, it's kind of a bridge to nowhere. So I'm wondering where that language came from and why the change recommended.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, a couple of things. one of the things that has happened in the program is the statutory limit for a grant is $1 million. And you can see by the list, it rarely approaches that. It's been over it a couple times by earmark, but the philosophy has been we've had limited funds, so we've kind of cut the grants short. As inflation has eaten it from 2003, what happens is a program that was supposed to be a 50-50 match, really a lot of these grants are only making up about 20% of the total need. For example, there's one in the city of Albert Lea. You'll see the program was a $1.8 million project. DEED awarded a $250,000 grant. That's part of what we see is one of the deficiencies is there's not enough money in there to fund that full 50% like programs that have their own earmark.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could ask for clarification. So you're saying that these funding amounts are not restricted because the city can only come up with 50%, but that the department is limiting them from the total need in order to give out more grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, that's correct. The funding cap, again, is $1 million. In this bill, it would raise it to $2 million, but we're trying to encourage them to award more dollars. And so as funding hasn't maybe been as strong as they would like or we would like, they keep those grants relatively low. And so the language actually in the bill changes it to be a 50% grant program. Currently, it says up to 50%, and because of inflation and other factors, the percentage being made up by this grant has been reduced.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. Could you answer that second question, it's likely to be?
Sure.
I'm a little theory about
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, we have had a brief conversation with Dean. We'd like to find some other language that can bring everyone comfort. But here is the concept and the problem that's out there that we're trying to address. If I'll use the City of Albert Lea. If the City of Albert Lea were to apply to open a new industrial park, Deed ought to say, no, you have a good supply of industrial property ready to go. We got that grant. We opened up an industrial park. But you'll find other communities that do not have industrial property that's ready to go, shovel ready. And so when Deed or whoever, a site selector, comes to the community, let's use Staples as an example, and say, do you have a 20-acre site ready to go? If they answer no, but we could have, if we apply for this grant, we do all these things, maybe in a couple of years we'll actually have this project ready, that wouldn't work for them very well. It might in the case of an expansion, but they do need, communities do need a certain amount of industrial property that's ready to go as opposed to potential for development. So that's what that is driving at, is to give communities that have no or very little industrial property an opportunity. And they've got some skin in the game, too, because they have to come up with at least 50%, if not more. So if the grant is only 25%, they still have to put 75% in. And as you know, city councils are not likely to do that unless they see that that benefit is there for the city residents as well. So the check on that is it not a 100% program? The city still has some skin in the game. If there's a way, as this weaves its way through the process, to find some other language, because I understand the concern that Deed and others have, is that you got 100 acres ready to go and you just want to add another 100, that probably doesn't make a lot of sense. So it'd be hard to justify that.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Dorman, I think I'm going to beg to differ with you. The reason Deed has that dollar figure typically in there is because they have business professionals looking at it a second time. You have your local EDA, and I understand that you used to run one down in Albert Lea. And quite frankly, I've been falling victim to it myself a couple of times. You know, the bright, shiny star, the promises that are coming in from all the dirt people saying, well, we'll build this and they will come. Honest to God, I would never lie to you. And have a second set of eyes looking at it and said, well, you know, this is state dollars, this is tax dollars that we're doing, we're happy to help you out, but you need to look at this a second time. We're willing to do 25% or 35%. You know, and I've gone through some of your numbers here, and I was just going off of what you had here. And some of these job creations are, like Blooming Prairie is $21,000 per job, and if you have to have a 75% match, I you know, that would really bump that up to about a $40,000 per job. Or you know, Elk River looks like a good one at $18,000 now, or $12,000 now. I can't do the math that quick. None of these are quite like a professional football team subsidy. I'll give you that. But so the idea that Deed is kind of scrimping on the dollars because they don't have them is wrong. Deed is scrimping on the dollars because they look at these projects from a professional, with a professional eye, to what is a good return on investment. And if you're spending $40,000 a job for five jobs, or you know, whatever that dollar figure is there, that's 10 jobs. So how long does it take the state to reclaim its $400,000? That's kind of the base principle that we try to do here. We never get our full dollar figure back. I don't know that I've ever remembered one about Representative Gunther. But we try to get closer. Now, I have an issue with doing it all in bonding. I think it's a bad way to do it. And I'm likely to pass this one along. I think your next bill is a much better bill, because it puts $10 million in cash and $10 million in bonding. So, frankly, $20 million in bonding, I'm not even sure we're going to have a bonding bill this year. You know, if I was a betting man, that this might
might go to roads, maybe, or bridges, but I don't know if it's going to go to economic development at $20 million. So I'll leave it at that, but I made the same mistake. Mr. Dorman, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong in how you said it, and I think Deed does a really, really good job of going over these projects and investing state dollars in the appropriate manner and at the appropriate level.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I can only speak to you from personal experience, maybe from three sides, from this side, from a former member, and from an EDA perspective in Albert Lea. When I applied for the grant for the city of Albert Lea for $250,000, I knew the maximum size of that grant before I'd ever submitted any paperwork. So they didn't have the opportunity to look at that. I do think Deed does a great job with this program. I have no criticism. They're hamstrung a little bit by funding. Okay. But the size of that grant, the maximum size of that grant, was in a pre-application before they'd ever seen any of the financials. So I knew what the maximum size of that grant was. So I would differ with you a little bit respectfully that it isn't quite we're glad they're looking at it, but think of it in terms of if this is a bonding bill, these are bonding projects, most of the line items that pass whatever it is, it's a 50% match. This program, because it goes into a fund and then has something less than that. If there's some way to give them some flexibility, I think we would be open to that, but I do think it's time to elevate those grants that are dwindling and that percentage drops to where you're getting down to 20% funding. So from my personal experience, A, D does a great job. B, a lot of those grant sizes are determined before they really ever examine it, so I would disagree with you on that part only slightly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Franzen, one of the principles that we've been trying to put in, not just in 2 years prior to this, but in years prior in the economic development world, is what's the clawback? If those five jobs, if those 50 jobs, if those however many jobs are not created, who's responsible for that? Who has to answer that particular question, and what's the penalty? And we spent the last 4 years putting together project rules, laws that say you get this money after you create the jobs, because we had a pretty bad time with handing out money on the promise that we're going to put jobs up there, and there was no clawback. I won't go into all the details. So somewhere in your bill, if we're going to do BDPI, there should at some level be a penalty, a clawback, a something that says you way over promised and you didn't meet your goal. So that's something to think about as you move forward. Because, frankly, again, the big shiny hill, object on the hill, the dirt people promise everything and then they only deliver about half most of the time. And the dirt people being the developers, the people who put up all the buildings and say we're going to bring 25 jobs to the area and they only get five. And I could document all those if I go up to the file up in the office, but I won't.
Representative Franzen, you have something to say?
I do. Thank you, Chair Gunther. Representative Mahoney, if you have examples of such projects that were never fully came to fruition, I would love to look over that. But, where I'm currently supposed to be in Health and Human Services with the whole MNsure thing, too. So I totally understand under-promising and over-delivering. So.
The other way around. Mr. Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, one other thing I should have amplified in my prior point was your discussion about how many jobs per dollar. You'd actually have to break these projects down because there may be, for example, in the case, again, I hate to use Albert Lea, but it's the one I'm most familiar with, we opened up 80 acres with that. So the jobs for the $250,000 would look, frankly, terrible. But understand, that's about 20% of the project. What's the accountability? It's the city taxpayers that are really going to pay the penalty if that land doesn't develop, that are taking that risk. But if you look at these projects in your city of any, whether you're in the metropolitan area or not, and you're going to extend sewer and water, you're likely to oversize it to accommodate that next growth. So that first business, it may look a bit askew, but I think if you come back and you look at maybe something that's funded in 2003 and say what else has happened because of that, I think you would have a much different picture.
Representative Sundin. Sorry it took so long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author or her support staff here, just looking at the handout from the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program graphics that you provided, and looking through some of my favorite towns here, La Prairie, Minnesota being one of them, awarded $175,000 for business expansion, sewer services, the business expansion, creating 12 to 16 jobs. It's great for the city of or town of La Prairie. I'm sure it's much appreciated. Virginia creating 10 jobs. Elk River creating 45 jobs. Jobs are great. Everybody's concerned about it. Are these quality jobs? Is there a standard that we can look to see if we're developing quality jobs or minimum wage jobs where the workers are still being subsidized for social services or whatever? I guess I would like to see where these jobs are meaningful jobs and they become good tax-paying jobs here in the state of Minnesota. Is there a way to measure that when we see all these jobs that are being created? Are they quality jobs?
Go ahead.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sundin, there is a state law that they would have to follow, a state subsidy law.
Very well. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin, I can get you the statutory citing, but there's a state business subsidy law, and most cities that I know of actually have a business subsidy law that's generally stronger, and it's based on you can't invest into a project like this. I believe it's 125% of the family of four income, so you can't use it to create a minimum wage job if that's your concern. You could not use these dollars for that, and I would say, nor would the city of La Prairie likely. I mean, I don't know the city of La Prairie personally, but I'm going to guess that city council is not likely to put their end of the money in there to create a $6 an hour job. I can guarantee the city of Virginia wouldn't do that. The city of Albert Lea wouldn't. So I'm not sure, even if they could, that there's a city that would invest their 50% or more in a low-quality job.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. I'll look forward to seeing those that criteria. Thanks.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, I thought I'd school Mr. Dorman on how they come up with that dollar figure. It's in the statute, I think it's $13.50. But what they don't tell you is how they come up with that. So they can take the CEO who's making $200,000, and they can take the minimum wage job at $6.50, add all the jobs together, and divide it, and you come up with $13.50. That gets you there quite often. Now, I'm not a big mode kind of guy, but that might be a better way to go on Minnesota job creation subsidies. So, I mean, I think you understand it, but for the other members of the committee, they take all the salaries and all the employees, lump them all together, and divide by the number of employees. So there's an awful lot of those jobs that don't meet the $13.50.
And Mr. Chair, Mahoney, I think that would be true of just about every state program that touches economic development, Greater Minnesota or the metro area. It's the same standard. So if it needs to be changed, I know we could take a look at it, but it should probably change for other things and not simply this program. I would, again, defer to your city if you have questions, because most cities have a business subsidy ordinance that surpasses the state and actually looks at what is the starting wage of these people that we're looking at. So I certainly can't speak for every city, and I don't claim to, but
Representative Sunday?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to challenge the wisdom of Representative Mahoney, but if House Research could provide us with a little more background on that, that would be appreciated at some point.
We'll do that, right? We'll look forward to it. Okay. Any other questions from any of the members? Any testimony from anybody in the audience for or against the bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 578 be passed and referred to Jobs and Job Growth and Energy Affordability Policy and Finance. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. 579. I will move House File 579 to be brought before us.
Yes, thank you, members. House File 579 is similar to House File 578, except for the cash portion, which Mr. Mahoney, Representative Mahoney, seems to be a fan of, so I think we're going to get along good on this bill. So we are providing a $10 million general fund appropriation in fiscal 2015 for the Greater Minnesota BDPI grant program. Sets aside the restriction that funds be used only for the capital costs of public infrastructure. Under the proposal, funds would be available to finance site preparation of property owned and to be used by private businesses. So, for example, I'll just give you an example of in my district. There is a high school called Jefferson High School. It's no longer being used because this year the new high school opened up. And so that site is left there. Well, the city of Alexandria wanted to keep that property, and so a gentleman by the name of Brent Smith put a $1 million, if the city of Alexandria was unable to purchase that property, then he would take ownership of it. And so what happened was AAEDC, so Alexandria Economic Development, came to me and wanted help in figuring out how to take ownership of that piece of property as well as tear down that property because of asbestos. They attempted to see if they could just keep the building, renovate it, but the asbestos deemed that piece of property harmful. So plans to rebuild that facility, keep it with local control instead of an outside company coming in and taking ownership for healthcare, manufacturing, and something else. There's another portion of that project. Anyhow, so I put in a bonding bill for 2.9, I believe the bonding bill was, and what was funded was 1.3 million. Needless to say, that piece of property, the AAEDC did not take over that piece of property, and so the private owner, Brent Smith, has property, owns that piece of property now, with the plans on doing exactly what AAEDC was going to do. Healthcare, manufacturing, and I can't remember the other portion of it. Anyhow, so under the old proposal, that cash would not be able to be used with a private owner. Okay. However, with this new bill possibility, he has that opportunity to apply for that cash grant if he chose to do so. And so that is kind of what I am hoping the members of the committee are, hoping for some agreement on that as well for not Alexandria but any city.
Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Franzen. Yes, this is a good bill. I think we should all vote for it. We did 2.2 in cash last year and $4 million in bonding. We still got money left. I think we can probably go with a little bit more money left and couple years up. So I think it's a great bill. I'm going to vote for it. Let's get this done.
Well, let's get it done. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and we have the T-shirt on today, but
get her done. Representative Miller, you have a question? You look puzzled.
I wasn't going to say anything, Mr. Chair, but this will be actually just in support of this. I think any time that we can use private dollars to match up with public dollars for the interest of a community, I've done some projects where we've been able to do that, but we've had to work really around the system to make that work. Private industry will put money into things such as this if we just give them the opportunity. So I think this is great. I think we should look at this with other granting programs that we have with Dean and what have you as well.
Well, any other questions from the membership? Any questions or statements anybody from the audience would like to make pertaining to this bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 579 pass and be referred to Garofalo's committee. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman.
He has another job, but I think he's programs. We can't see until March, is what I... Is he done now? I thought it was until March, but... Yeah, so he had another job doing something else, and I, he won't
yep,
be...
You are, we are adjourned.
Thank you.